In general, the advice that I have, believe in yourself and grind. If you know because you are authentic to a space and a consumer that something's going to work, you can back it up with data. Just grind and do it. You're gonna win.
This episode is also brought to you by my friends at Plunge. Some of you know that when I met Wim Hof, the Iceman, he was instrumental in helping me cure my chronic migraines with cold therapy. I first discovered cold plunging on my journey to better health about 3 years ago. I was getting pretty serious migraine headaches from a combination of poor sleep habits, inflammatory foods, work-related stress, and dehydration. I had no idea what was going on. I was miserable, couldn't function at work or home, and none of my doctors could figure out how to solve my problem without addictive pain meds. I started slowly with cold showers and immediately felt the benefits. I knew I needed to take it to the next level and started cold plunging. I focused on optimizing my sleep, fitness, nutrition, and it all started coming together. I have probably saved over $20,000 in medical bills staying healthy and fit on this protocol. How much would you invest to feel amazing? For me, the investment in a cold plunge to feel like me again was priceless. I've lost weight, I'm more mentally awake and don't need coffee or Red Bulls, and I'm doing my best to live a longer, healthier life to be with my family. That's what I want. Cold and heat therapy is an integral part of my regular training protocols now. My friends at Plunge just released the all-new, all-in unit, which is totally redesigned and full of upgrades. Use my code BRY, that's B-R-Y, to get a better price when you buy it. Just go to plunge.com and check out the all-new, all-in, as well as their beautiful hot sauna units available now for pre-order. It's been one of the best investments I've made in my health. I guarantee it. This episode is brought to you by WeWork. Don't just work from anywhere. Your working week deserves a little luxury, like beautiful spaces to spark ideas in person, designed carefully for collaboration and peaceful nooks with focus mode and awesome Wi-Fi. I love WeWork because I'm surrounded by like-minded people. It's a great place to hang out, network, or make good friends. They're even dog-friendly. Whether you're a solo entrepreneur or you bring your entire team, yes, your entire team, check out WeWork. Because now you can unlock productive, flexible workspaces in over 180 locations near you, especially if you use the WeWork All Access Basic. Get 30% off your first 5 months by using code Brian, AA30, that's B-R-Y-A-N, AA30. Or to redeem the offer, just go to we.co/behindthebrand. All right, here we go.
Hey, this is Brian Garofalo, CEO of Skullcandy. You are on Behind the Brand with Brian Elliott.
Everyone, welcome to another episode of the show. Brian, thank you for having us to your West Coast, or maybe we can't even say West Coast, to your Southern California world headquarters.
We'll take it. Brian, thank you for being here. And you're in Costa Mesa at Skullcandy Studios.
This is such a cool space. It's a brand new space. And it reminds me, you know, of the groundswell that was happening here in like the 90s. Tell me about, you know, this space. Why'd you guys put it here on Randolph Street?
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. So I love the energy here as well. Why we're here, it's all about the consumer. So our company is headquartered in Park City, Utah. Our core consumer is very active and loves board sports, loves content creation, and just so happens to be there are a lot more of those people right here. So we've built this space as a community center for those in our world to come here and film their podcasts, shoot their photos, create their videos, edit them, host an event where we can show content, we can put speakers on stage, all for those people to do it at no cost.
Yeah, it's super cool. And, you know, for people who don't have the context, I mean, basically this part of Costa Mesa, not too far down the street, Newport Beach, and then maybe a little further up the street, Huntington Beach. This is like the mecca of action sports. You know, you have like the Quicksilvers up in Huntington. You've got the Volcom, Hurley. You know, all those guys got their start basically just, you know, several blocks, maybe a mile or two radius from here. And it's like the birthplace. O'Neill, Rip Curl, all those people.
Yeah. Essentially, you have you have one brand headquartered in Australia, but outside of that, the top 12 biggest action sports brands in the history of the category have headquarters within 5 miles of where we're sitting.
Yeah. So it's pretty special to be in this neighborhood, and it's, I mean, I just love the nostalgia, the feeling, and you know, there's a whole new energy here with all these new companies popping up. So who knows who's going to be the next, you know, fill in the blank.
Yeah, certainly don't mind that on the block, we've got three breweries. We've got a couple really cool up and coming brands. We've got a couple great restaurants. We've got 30 awesome restaurants within walking distance.
Yeah.
There's a lot of energy, like you said, great place to be.
Yeah. And last time I was here for an event, you had some great live music. So there's like, basically it's art and culture. It's like a little bit of an epicenter if you don't know it.
Yeah. No, that's the vibe we're trying to catch, and not just catch, but help move forward.
Yeah. So I usually ask my guests, how did you get this job?
Great question. So I ended up in this job through a network. A mentor of mine, somebody who's a chair of a board of a company I worked at previously. So he was doing some work with Skullcandy and brought my name up as, this is somebody who has a great track record of doing the things that we need done here. Other than that, I always like to say, you know, I spent the last 25 years interviewing.
Yeah.
So a long time in a career, doing the best that I can to build brands that service a very unique consumer. That's who has traditionally been the Skullcandy consumer. And we really need to speak to them again in the modern version of the way we can with a brand in 2023.
There's a legacy here, but let's get real. I mean, about 10 years ago, the brand was pretty hot. And now it's not what it used to be, whether, you know, just, somewhere lost its way. You're here from Igloo, and you're like the turnaround guy. You're like, you know, here to reboot, reset, you know, brand new team, brand new mindset. How are you going to do that? That's a tall order.
Yeah. It's a very hard question to answer. So I would also say, look, there's a couple different sides of the story. With a very specific consumer, Skullcandy is not the brand that it once was. Also, the very active consumer, usually in board sports, has a pretty short life cycle. So we constantly have to reinvent ourselves and probably skipped a generation with brand narrative going a little left of center, a little right of center. I'm here to pull that back to center, but again, modern, unique version of how we can do that in 2023.
Well, let's stay on the life cycle for a second. So who's the psychographic, who's the demographic of the consumer? Because I know there's lots of categories. Like, you know, we're editing these videos and, you know, we're using Skullcandy headphones. Mm-hmm. I'm traveling. I've got Skullcandy noise-canceling headphones, you know, that I'm wearing. My son's a gamer. Mm-hmm. He loves, you know, those thumpers, you know, the ones that are...
Oh, yeah, the Crusher.
Yeah, the Crusher. And, you know, so there's, I would say, you know, four or five different sort of psychographics, demographics. So, like, explain the life cycle.
Yeah, of course. So we have essentially three target consumer groups. And they're, I love when you say psychographics, because traditionally in consumer goods, you would really talk demographics. And I think we're very different in 2023, where, you know, there's a lot of blending around the edges of our core consumers. But in general, our consumers are very active, and specifically around board sports. So skateboarding, surfing, snowboarding, and those are lifestyles. They're not defined by a specific age group, a gender, a location. Those do have very obvious cohorts around them.
Yeah.
But they're very different today than they were 20 years ago when the brand started, and maybe 10 years ago when it was at kind of the peak of brand awareness with those consumers. Then today we have consumers that didn't really exist in the same way 10 and 20 years ago, which are content creators. What we're doing right now, you're a content creator as a podcaster. Podcasting didn't exist the way it does today in a very short time ago. We look at content creators as the musicians, the producers, the filmers, the editors, the podcast creators, the comedians on social media, things like that. Again, you know, that is around psychographics. I want to create something unique and put it out in the world. It's not necessarily bound by age, gender, location, things like that.
Yeah.
And then last, we've got gamers. So again, another lifestyle, you can have somebody who's very, very focused on gaming, and it has a lot to do with their decision-making around what products they buy, how they spend their time, et cetera. And then you've got casual gamers. So everything in between is a huge, huge audience. And we have a very specific vision of who our gaming consumer is, but psychographics for us, the board sports consumer, the content creator, the gamer.
Mm-hmm. And so when you say the lifestyle is short, can you unpack that a little bit more? Like,
yeah,
why is it short?
So skateboarding is a very easy example. Skateboarding is very, very accessible. Almost anyone around the world can do it with, you need a little patch of concrete and you need a skateboard. And it's not incredibly expensive, and you can definitely find, you know, something hand-me-down or used. You don't need to get in new for $200. Mm-hmm. So almost everybody around the world can get into skateboarding. It's easy to find content and inspiration and motivation. But usually what data tells us is skateboarding is a very young pursuit. Mm-hmm. And it's a very small amount of people that get into it as a lifestyle, and they're a skateboarder for life.
How young? Where does it start?
I've seen core of skateboarding really between 12 and 18 years old.
Okay.
Starts a little younger for a lot of people, starts a little older for a lot of people, but that's kind of the core in there. Mm-hmm. And then a lot of people do drop off where skateboarding doesn't become as big a passion because it's related to transportation as well.
Yeah, I think that tracks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Surfing and snowboarding, however, end up becoming a much longer life cycle where those are a lot less hard on your body.
Mm-hmm.
And you can do them for a lot longer and later into life. So also getting into it pretty young, but casually and not, you know, participating every day, but people that own a few surfboards, live by a beach, surfing well into, you know, how long can I walk?
Yeah.
And then same with snowboarding, skiing, participating a whole lot more if you're in a mountain town, but up into how long can I walk? Mm-hmm. I can still ski and snowboard if I'm going a few days a year.
Yeah, and it becomes sort of like you start bringing your family along, right? Like, so my son and I surf together. You know, I'm mm-hmm. doing more longboarding these days than I am surfing on a potato chip. And I love that just fine. And yet, you know, he's learning, and so we're doing that together. And you're right, it becomes age agnostic, but right. You know, skiing, snowboarding, same thing, you know.
Yep. And you also just explain the story of why you're a Skull Candy consumer and so is your son.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so is that kind of what you're hoping, is that people my age maybe have a little bit of nostalgia and they're remembering the brand? Oh yeah, that brand was really cool, and basically it carried me through my 20s. And now I can pass that on to my son, who's into other stuff, as well as the stuff that I'm into.
No. So I do love that you have awareness of the brand,
yeah.
But we want to put the right message in front of you at the right time where you have awareness, but you say, oh my gosh, that is really interesting, and I need to go check it out.
Mm-hmm.
When you make the decision to purchase one of our products, we've got to deliver on an awesome experience. You've got to feel a specific way because of those psychographics of you as a consumer. And that's got to get you coming back for product number 2, 3, and 4 in, you know, the traditional 18 to 24 month replacement cycle versus 10 years.
Yeah. Let's talk about the competition. So you have some pretty, let me ask you, do you have competition in the space? Do you consider some of these, you know, like Apple or Beats or, you know, some of these other headphones that are established in the market, are these competitors, or are these like, you know, what beer is to milk? They're both drinks, but like they're in totally different aisles.
And absolutely, they're competitors. Yeah. So, you know, you can think broad scale and you can think very narrow scale. They're sitting next to us on pegs at retail stores. They're very direct competitors. When you're thinking about a brand like Apple, they have the Apple ecosystem. So products that are running on a similar operating system that can do things together that we can't, they are sold as add-on sales to phones, which is the core delivery system of the content.
Yep.
So very much, yes, competitors, but competing in a different way. So we have to look at what is our total addressable market with, without them, surgically, who are the consumers we want to go win and do a phenomenal job with them. There are a lot of people out there that use Apple devices that should very much think Skullcandy first when thinking headphones.
Okay. And so why is that?
Because we make them feel a specific way.
Yeah.
So I can't help but say this one, you know, one of the greatest ads of all time, the Apple 1984 commercial.
Epic, yeah.
Fast
Iconic.
Forward to 2023, you are walking down any street in Manhattan or on a subway, and what is every single person wearing? Apple AirPods. And it's very ironic to me that it feels like they are today once they, what they once were saying were the opposite of. For us, we want people that have that psychographic match to the core consumer that are part of our community. We can deliver them something that no other brand can, and a lot of it is brand. So we will do things, we do things that an Apple or another competitor never will. Mm-hmm. But that's how we win. We differentiate with our brand.
Yeah. So this series is called Behind the Brand. And, you know, we're here in the context of this space. I love this because you've got your team working in the background, and that's kind of cool. The atmosphere here is people are probably working away on marketing campaigns and other creative stuff. How would you describe the Skullcandy brand?
Oh, that's a great question. So I like to describe it in a very simple word, fun. It's a word that is very easy to understand and what really differentiates us from other headphone brands and competitors, but it's also an acronym for us. So when we say fun internally behind the brand, the F is for fearless. When you think about that board sports consumer, somebody who's going to be upside down 20 feet off the ground on a snowboard, somebody who's going to be in a 10-foot barrel at Pipeline, somebody who's going to be sliding down a handrail over 12 stairs. Most people on earth say that is absolute insanity. The consumer for us says, that is what I aspire to do. It looks like so much fun.
Yeah.
We need to take that ethos into our brand when it is industrial design, when it is featured delivery, when it's M&D and colors, things like that. The U is for the underdogs. We're a challenger brand, so we're always going to work harder, faster, smarter than some of the big behemoths. And then the N is next. What really sets us apart is our authenticity. When we say we connect with the consumer who's that board sports consumer or content creator, we can't do that without being authentic. And we are those people. When I say fearless, we have Olympians on our staff. We have people that have been in the pages of Thrasher magazine on our staff.
Yeah.
Like it is absolutely incredible how authentic the actual people inside the brand are that make the brand the brand. So when we say next, we know what's coming next. We know the band who was on stage here 2 months ago, in a couple years, they can be headlining Coachella. Mm-hmm. We know the skateboarder that's going to be at the Olympics in 2 years because we're right there with them. They're our friends.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I would co-sign that. So when I was up visiting the Park City headquarters, it's overlooking the resort there, the ski lift, you know, and it seems like, or people are telling me that, you know, when there's snow, there's snow days, or people are out mountain biking or trail running or, you know, doing all this stuff. So
a big part of our culture. So two fun things. We have lunch laps. So inside our office, the headquarters in Park City, you'll have a large room where people store their mountain bikes and skis and snowboards, because at lunch, we're going to take some laps. Everybody inside the office there gets a free Epic Pass. So all the skiing is paid for. We have the powder day rule. So we get 10 inches of snow at the top of Snowbird the previous day. People have to be in the office by 11.
Yeah.
So they can go get some powder that morning.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
These are things that we care about, and ideally it shows up in the product we deliver to the consumer.
Yeah, you're walking the talk. So I'm just curious about, was there a rebrand? Like, did you guys go through this rebranding exercise?
So we're smack dab in the middle of it. So I've been here for about 10 months. We do have a lot of new energized leadership. And like I said, trying to pull us a little bit back to center with what that consumer knows and loves us for. And with that is a modernization of the brand. So in very short order, you'll see a lot of exciting things from us with industrial design and products, with actual color and material and finish on product, with packaging of product, and then certainly with marketing messaging, what you see in advertisements, on social media, et cetera.
Yeah. And so I'm just curious about, because, you know, I asked that in the context. I know other people who are watching this or listening to this on podcast, they probably have their own little side hustle, their new venture, they're trying to launch a product or service, and they're thinking about branding and how to go through that exercise. So walk me through how you guys got to that FUN fun acronym, because it's awesome. But like, were there other alternative words that you had slotted in there to try it on for size? Like,
yeah, absolutely. So, a lot of smart people doing a lot of work trying to make complex problems have very simple solutions.
Yeah.
So strategy we have internally, ton of difficult work, but it comes down to something that's very easy for everybody to understand and get behind. When we're talking fun, I think, it comes down to, again, authenticity and community.
Yeah.
So when you're building a brand, who are you building it for? What do those people really care about? And how can you deliver it to them in a unique way?
Mm-hmm.
So at one point, the affinity for this brand from a certain set of consumers was just absolutely off the charts, because we were doing things nobody had ever thought of and doing in the community with that competitive set, because it was too risky.
Yeah.
Then the business went public, definitely got a little more conservative, and a little more focus on the bottom line versus the investments in brand building. And now we need to find that healthy medium of taking the risk, but making it have financial sense.
Mm-hmm.
And all that comes with very clear, concise strategy and plans that a team can rally behind.
Yeah. So I'm going to go back to push a little bit back on the fun. Was there another word slotted in there? Like, you had if fun is at number one and that's the mm-hmm. winner, did you go back? Was there a number two, three, four, five choice? Like,
yeah. So the exercise and kind of the process of getting there, was really the how the sausage is made.
Yeah.
We go with the ingredients first, and then what is really important that we want to communicate. And those essentially become the actions, the words, how we explain those things. And then, okay, we want to wrap this up and put a bow on it, so everybody that is working on this brand can really rally behind, oh, fun, I get it.
Yeah.
This is what fun means to me. Also, when we have the acronym, there's real meat on the bone there.
Yeah.
So short answer, yes, but we really tried to kind of force it. And it was really about the individual components and the fearless underdog and next, how those rolled up into a word. So we got a little bit lucky with fun.
Yeah. Well, what didn't make the cut? That's what I want to know.
Yeah. I'd have to go back and look at the notes on that one.
Yeah. Well, how would you describe the brand, let's say 10 or 20 years ago? How different is it from now?
So 20 years ago, this is literally our 20-year anniversary. So, a traditional founder entrepreneur story. So brand was founded by Rick Alden, and he is a phenomenally creative person. So our origin story is born on a chairlift. Rick was literally riding a chair at the Canyons in Park City, 3 miles door to door from where our office is today. When you go into our office there's a chairlift right in the lobby. So Born on a Chairlift story is he had an MP3 player and a phone in his pocket, listening to music on the MP3 player before they were all combined into one device, gets a phone call and says, ah, I wish I could just switch back and forth. Rick invents the split jack with a toggle switch to go back and forth. That's the aha moment. And now Rick is a snowboarder and he is really, really passionate about board sports. So again, with the consumer in mind, man, what does my community want from a headphone company that isn't being delivered?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it was fun. It was a lot of color. It was a lot of big bass. It was a lot of cool prints and patterns. And he delivered that. And I would say the difference between what was then and what is now is just the general level of operating efficiency of running a business.
Yeah.
So a ton of risk in investments in product. And we don't know if this color will work, but we're going to go buy the inventory and see what happens.
Mm-hmm.
So when you look at a product catalog, you know, 15, 18 years ago, I mean, it's this big.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of SKUs.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So now a ton of SKU rationalization and a lot of data going into what are going to be the best ideas that we're willing to take the biggest risks on, but we know we're going to have the best returns with.
Yeah. I love it. Talk about the marketing mix. So how are you, making awesome products these days is table stakes, right? Like, mm-hmm. That's what people, they buy it, they put it on, they expect it to be awesome.
Yep.
Talk about the marketing mix. How are you doing that?
Okay.
Treat it like a pie,
right.
And maybe we cut it into traditional, non-traditional, at a home, talk to me about how you're marketing. Yeah.
Yeah. I think the traditional versus non-traditional mix just says a lot about who our consumer is and how we connect with them. The traditional mix, I think we're very similar to what you'd see with most consumer goods businesses today. The big difference is the actual content we put in that pipeline.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to spend a significant amount of our resource, time, money, and people on Google and Meta.
Mm-hmm.
On Amazon, on co-op with our biggest retail partners.
Yep.
When we get into non-traditional.
Yeah. What percentage of the pie does that represent? Is that 80%? Is that 60%?
Yeah, you're in the zone there. It's probably in the 75 zone.
Okay. So 3/4 of your budget's going to
a few different tactics that we talked about there. But
yeah.
Biggest chunk of it is going to go to digital advertising.
Digital marketing, yeah.
Yep.
Yep.
Non-traditional mix, and when we get out of the retail store, because we are going to support a lot of our retail partners with co-op, and you get off the internet with a lot of our digital marketing. So you're going to see us partner with athletes. You're going to see us partner with social media influencers that connect with those three core consumer groups.
Yep.
You're going to see us do lots of grassroots events. You're going to see us do really basic things like put a sticker in the box when you buy a package. People love our brand. They want to represent it. Yeah. You're going to see things.
Well, let's not assume everyone understands why you would put a sticker in there. I mean, you're hoping that's going to be POP somewhere, right?
Like, exactly.
People are going to be reminded of the brand.
Yeah,
it's a little leave behind.
If it goes on the back of somebody's car,
mm-hmm.
If it goes on a locker at school, if it goes on the sign of the trailhead where somebody's mountain biking.
Yeah, somebody's bored.
Yeah, it goes somewhere on the way down to Trestles in Southern California.
Yeah, on the back of their computer.
Yeah, of course, on boards, computers, cell phones, all those things.
Yeah. It's a little tiny thing that...
Yeah, it's a little tiny thing, but if I'm somebody who doesn't know about Skull Candy, and I see the sticker and I find out what the logo is, but then I see the person it's attached to or the place it is, instantly it's going to form an opinion or a perception in my mind of, oh, surfing and Skull Candy. Oh, musician that makes cool music that I like and Skull Candy.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, funny person on social media who I follow and Skull Candy. Okay, I'm starting to see patterns here. And it's not, it is just as much as it is not when it comes to consumers.
Yeah. How about, a lot of brands are going through this logo refresh or even like a font typeface Are you guys, have you considered any of that? And some of it's not great, by the way. Like some of these people doing these brand refreshes with their, either their logo mark or their typeface is pretty bad.
Yeah, I'm not a huge fan of that.
Yeah.
So you see it happen with tiny brands that have been around for 2 years. You see it happen with Pepsi and Coke.
Yeah.
So when it's a massive, well-established brand, updating their logo, usually at the crux of that is a CMO looking to establish their DNA on a brand.
Right. Do you see the Johnson & Johnson remake? It's like almost a 200-year brand. And like,
right.
I mean, yeah. The change is kind of negligible. It's just like, why?
Right. Yeah. So when you do that with a very large brand, it adds a ton of cost. So of course it's got to be really justified with why are you doing that? Is it winning new consumers? Is it connecting with a specific audience? Has your audience evolved and you need to evolve along with them?
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of all those decision points that go into that. Do we need to do it? No. You'll absolutely see us updating packaging. We actually have new packaging that's currently in market and moving old packaging out. But that is very, very specific to delivering messaging to consumers of what's in the box and why should I buy this product versus that product?
Mm-hmm.
Why should I buy a Skullcandy product versus a competitive product? Why should I buy a $100 Skullcandy product versus a $60 Skullcandy product that look very similar? So we have to do a much better job of that with our packaging at the point of purchase. Outside of that, we have a phenomenal logo. I think stays with us for a very, very long time.
Yeah, it's baked into the name.
Yeah,
it's kind of perfect.
Well, I appreciate that.
it makes sense. So the other thing that I'm thinking is, how are you going to make this turnaround? Like, it sounds like you're doing just all the blocking and tackling, like all the core stuff. That's super intuitive. Talk to me about pricing. Cause you know, the crushers, what are those retail for about?
We have our newest Capstone product, the Crusher ANC2 is $229.
Okay. So you're still over $100 less expensive than an Apple product.
Yeah.
And yet, you know, the quality is on par. It's just not Apple.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so how did you arrive at that price? I mean, is that like, were you looking at other benchmarks in the market? Like pricing strategy is fascinating to me.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, no, it is incredibly complex.
Yeah.
So pricing strategy for us, we are, if you look into a product category and you think about a good, better, best merchandise mix, so we offer a best experience at a value. So it puts us in better. We are certainly not opening price point. We deliver consumers a great value for the brand. We deliver a way better sound experience, app connectivity, ability to customize how you listen in a product. We connect easy. We sound great. We have great battery.
Well, I don't know of any other technology that has the sort of, how would you explain the Crusher's technology?
It's a base haptic.
Yeah.
So, and it's variable. You can crank it up, you can keep it down. So not only can you change it on the fly, but you can have your own customized presets of, ooh, I like to listen to podcasts with this much bass. I like to listen to this specific type of music with a ton of bass. I like to listen to action movies with the mid-range.
It's very cool. I can't think of any other product that's doing haptic like you guys are.
It is unique to us. So we've patented technology. We have also we've also done a really great job branding it. So people know us as Crusher. Mm-hmm. They know Skullcandy is the brand that creates Crusher technology. We have a huge fan base around Crusher. 50 million people have tagged us on TikTok just talking about Crusher headphones.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a great way for us to charge a premium, but also we want to deliver that value. So we find the right mix of, gross margin for us when it is sold into a retailer. It's a it's a opportunity for the retailer to make a specific margin as well.
Yep.
But we do deliver that phenomenal value to the consumer. So
What's the Apple product? It's almost like $500, right?
$550.
Man, you're like $175 less.
Yeah, there's an Apple product, a Beats product, and a Bose product that are all in premium price bands, and I would put the Crusher ANC2 up against any one of those any day.
So then let me ask you this. So why not hike the price up just a little bit? Because you, I mean, the delta between where you're at now and the, you know, most premium price is pretty wide. Why not? Why not scoot it up?
Yeah. So, you know, why not? The consumer that we have our biggest fan base in, and we want to deliver the value to them, it's the right price for them.
Yeah. And who's that?
Well, that's those active people that are into board sports. It's the content creator. It's the gamer. Now, I love talking about psychographics. I don't love talking about demographics.
Yeah.
If you look at cohorts, on average, they're a little bit younger.
Yeah.
Less expendable income.
Yeah.
But they love brand.
Yeah.
So we deliver the product on parity. It's got to sound great. It's got to connect to your device very easily. It's got to have long battery life. We deliver on those things, I think, above par. And we also give those consumers the phenomenal brand experience. They feel a certain way when they've got Skullcandy on their head versus something else.
Yeah.
And when we can deliver it for the price that's right for them, we win.
Yeah, I guess just thinking of it out loud right now, it's like, if you're going to buy Apple, you're going to buy it at any price. You know, like, you're not price sensitive. But if you are price sensitive, you want to look at something that has equal quality and experience. And then you guys are right there to swoop in. And it's like a phenomenal value because it's so much less. I mean, you can almost buy two pair, you know, one for your friend or one for your other editor. It's like, you know.
Yeah. And I think value is a great word. Some people, when they think value, immediately just think low price. I love the idea of value of I bought something and it over-delivered.
Yeah.
So if we can provide that value experience, it absolutely creates brand loyalists. Yeah. We deliver on what they expect in the products, what they love in the brand, and they can go out to dinner that night because they didn't spend $550.
Yeah, or they can,
that's pretty great value.
They can get their snow pass or their
there you go.
Dinner after a surf sesh or whatever is a little extra spending money. You know, as a turnaround guy, you probably have you got a little fire under your feet, I would bet. I mean, it's sort of a fun opportunity to be in, right? If we use the fresh powder analogy, you know, you've got fresh powder to snowboard on and make your own tracks. What's keeping you up right now at night? Like, what are you most concerned about?
Yeah, I always love being concerned about tomorrow. How do we get the result we want tomorrow today? How do we do it? How do we do it bigger, faster, and more affordable? So as a turnaround person, you know, I kind of have to split the business into front of house, back of house. Back of house is immediate, cut costs. Front of house takes a longer time, but we got to get it right, and that's build brand. And then the holistic view of how are we going to be the best version of Skullcandy for generations to come? And that's develop people. So find the best people we possibly can for the business and take our absolute all-star team that we have now and give them the skills to continue developing them to make them our leaders of tomorrow. So cut costs. Operational side of the business.
Is that fewer SKUs? You mean you're
no, just being more selective? Cost is going to be things like taking COGS out, looking at OPEX, looking at deals that we're involved in, and are they the right deals, and can we get better pricing? So in general, holistic view of where we're spending money and how do we get same or better result by spending less.
Yeah, take us behind the CEO curtain there. Are you doing the negotiating or do you have team members? Are you part of the negotiation process with some of those manufacturing partners?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So it's all relative to scale, right?
Yeah.
And we have experts that do everything. And sometimes I'll weigh in on questions they're asking me. Sometimes I'll be heavily involved when, you know, it's something like building a relationship with contract manufacturers that we've worked with for years and years and are building our next best product, working on our relationship with our, you know, our biggest and best customers.
Yeah.
And how we're going to grow together and make this a mutually beneficial relationship for the next 20 years.
Yeah. So, you know, a little while ago, we had Chris Voss on the podcast. Chris Voss is the negotiation boss. He wrote that book, Never Split the Difference. He's a former FBI negotiator. And now, you know, he has like a master class and he's teaching people how to negotiate. Do you have any negotiation tips or like, you know, is, do you have a tactic or strategy for negotiation? Any advice?
Probably listen to Chris Voss is a great one.
Yeah.
Look, I always go into every negotiation differently.
Yeah.
So I think it's a mix of, time and place and partner on the other side of the table. So what is the end result that we're looking for? What do we know is a healthy result for the partner on the other side? Will this be a strategic long-term relationship or is this transactional? When it's transactional relationship, we're not looking to split the difference. When it's a strategic relationship, we want both parties to come out feeling great to go build together.
Yeah. How about on the team side? Because finding great people, I mean, the fact that you're focused on that is phenomenal. Again, I think that's sort of table stakes now too for building a great company. It is all about the people. So what attributes are you looking for in people? I mean, skills can be taught, right? Mm-hmm. But beyond the skills, what are you looking at? What, you know, the EQ and all that?
No, it's a great question. I think taking a step back, it's not all about finding great people. It's definitely about developing people as well.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a phenomenal team in-house that's been there a lot longer than I have. And immediately I can see a lot of the staff have such incredible potential and we need to invest in them versus looking to go outside. That being said, we've brought a lot of talent in from the outside and then directly answering the question, tangibles and intangibles. So I look for people that are authentic to the consumer, especially when it comes to product sales and marketing.
Yeah.
So what does a consumer expect from our brand and can people deliver on that? So that's number one. Can they be authentic to the brand? Can they be passionate about the brand?
Yeah.
Number two, I do love those things that you either have or you don't, and they're very hard to teach. How much do you want it? Are you the type of person who who's going to put in the effort to do a phenomenal job, regardless of if you're getting paid for it or not? It's just built in your DNA. Are you the type of person who's going to look for the best system and process to get something done so it can be repeatable by anybody, or are you going through the motions? So I love authenticity. I love people that just have the drive in them. Mm-hmm. And then of course comes down to functional expertise. So at a high level, there's an expectation that you know how to do your job really, really well.
Yeah.
At an entry level, there's that desire to, I want to learn more, put me in coach.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. Talk about the goals or the P&L. I mean, a lot of people may not know even what a P&L is if they're new or coming out of school, it's a new term, but it's like, so you're at the helm, you're the CEO, you're managing all these things. You've got pretty, I would guess, because you have a board and other things, you've got an aggressive sales goal. Give us an idea, like in terms of scale, what we're talking about, like Skullcandy is a gross revenue. Like what's the nut?
Okay. Private company, so can't share that one.
Yeah. I mean, you could say, you know, give me a ballpark.
Yeah, I would say less than a billion, more mm-hmm. than 100 million.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So we're talking about hundreds of millions of dollars. Okay. And how does that compare? Like let's take a look at someone like a Bose or another, mm-hmm. you know, someone that's maybe a vertical competitor.
Yep.
What's the difference? Are you about in the same ballpark or are you?
Well, we've got about 50% of the industry is, or the category is owned by businesses that are a whole lot bigger than us. There's a few competitors about on parity with us that are another 25%. Mm-hmm. And then the last 25% is lots and lots and lots of very small brands.
Yeah, maybe like international people who are popping up, mm-hmm. popping into the market who may or may not stay.
Yep.
So what percentage of the pie do you have right now?
Depends on how you want to go look in the market.
Yeah.
But yeah, we are a meaningful competitor to every single headphone company in the market.
Okay, fair. So are your goals this year? I mean, you're 10 months in.
Yeah.
You know, a couple more months, end of the year, you'll be a full year. Do you have pretty aggressive goals this year, or are you like you're easing into it? And again, I'm asking that with context because I know other people are building their companies and they're wondering like, okay, we're going to 10X our sales this year, right. Brian. Like, is that realistic? Is that how you guys are approaching it? Or like, what is your approach when you're growing into something?
That's a great question. So size and scale, where we are in maturity of our business right now, job for year one is stabilize the business. So majority of my efforts are focused on the back half of the business and get us on the bottom line where we need to be.
Yeah.
As we look into the next few years, it's all about strategic growth. So 10X the business in 3 years, no. But we're looking to significantly outpace category growth. So headphones is a mature category, grows by low single digits in the US year over year. We'll do a whole lot better than that.
Mm-hmm. And so let's stay on categories. What other categories are you in? I know you have speakers and other things, but like maybe people who don't know Skullcandy, what's the offering?
When you're thinking headphones, there's a few subcategories that we play in. So Bluetooth over-ear headsets, the big Skullcandy Crusher ANC2. Then we've got True Wireless. So those are your earbuds. Mm-hmm. We have actual wired products still. So a lot of active people, when they don't want to risk losing an earbud, but they don't want something as big as the headset, they're still going to connect with a wire to a device.
Yeah. Whenever I'm doing all my BMX, like double jumps and all that kind of stuff, it's like,
when you're upside down.
When I'm upside down, yeah.
You don't want to lose those headphones.
Twirling.
And then we've got gaming headsets. Mm-hmm. So we're active in the gaming category. Outside of that, we have a range of Bluetooth speakers. And then we have an accessory line. The accessory line for us is portable power and then some charging cables.
How much do you think about innovation? How much are you like, I'm sure you're innovating within those categories, mm-hmm. but how much are you thinking about widening the lane?
Yep. Every single day. So innovation is also what differentiates us.
Yeah.
So we think about innovation with product, things like Crusher. It's a very unique innovation for us, and how do we apply that across other products? But also innovation just comes in the form of industrial design and colors, materials, fabrications. How can we take something that already exists and make it really, really interesting to a consumer just by the way it looks?
Yeah. I wonder, like... a lot of these innovations happen, I think, from discovering subcultures,
mm-hmm.
you know, there's the whole action sports subculture, but within action sports, you've got surf, skate, snow, which is, and BMX, let's not leave out BMXers, you know, and there's several other emerging categories within action sports. You got wakeboarders and you got, mm-hmm. you know, other people, but it's like, where's the white space right now in the subculture world? Mm-hmm. Are you guys looking at that at all?
Yeah, absolutely. So. Yeah. That always comes down to use case. So how are those consumers using their product, the way those consumers evolve, the way they use their products evolve.
Mm-hmm.
So surfing, no one's ever worn headphones in the water. You know, lots of people at one time, there are some people out there that do it. You absolutely, if you're a fan of WSL or competitive surfing, you see surfers at the highest level wearing Bluetooth headsets 100% of the time before they get in the water.
Mm, yeah.
Music gives them energy.
Yeah.
So you see a lot of surfers doing that just in general before they get in the water.
Yeah.
When you see snowboarders and skiers, traditionally you have seen them with wired product and color product, because if something falls out of their ear, they want to be able to spot it. Mm-hmm. One white earbud on the ground on a mountain on top of snow is not easy to find.
Yeah.
Helmets. When you and I were growing up doing these activities, it was very rare to see somebody in a helmet. Today, everybody's wearing helmets.
Yep.
So especially skiing and snowboarding, integrating audio into helmets.
Mm-hmm.
That is white space.
Yeah. Okay. I love it. Final advice for budding entrepreneurs, other people who are running their brand. What would you tell them?
I love this question. So in general, the advice that I have, believe in yourself and grind. If you know, because you are authentic to a space and a consumer, that something's going to work, you can back it up with data. Just grind and do it. You're gonna win. The other thing is, don't be shy. There are so many people that are so generous with their time that have done what you have done before. Go find the mentors, the coaches, ask them the questions, ask them for help, and put really great people around you.
I mean, we were just sitting back, you know, chopping it up, reminiscing about the good old days and all that, you know, tracking my roots, where I came from and where I'm going. But like I say, man, always said it, it's not about the destination, it's all about the journey. Ain't nothing changed but the weather. The dangling carrot, it hang from the rear view. Uh-huh. Your dreams in the past ain't nowhere near you. Backseat drivers got nothing but 2 cents. Shotgun riders too biased, they all liars. I should get an A for effort, I'm too tired. But I'm never giving up, that's why I'm kinda admired. Role model, like it or not, I gotta play it. Sugarcoat the rhyme sometimes, but still say it. Said I was quitting at 40, it's just a fib. I'm still a kid that's wiping the food off of my bib. You ever wanted something so bad that you could taste it? Cried over every opportunity wasted. Good.